thank you for being in the room. Thank you for making this a priority in your life. For those of you who are members of Warren, it's good to see you again. Had two consecutive weeks where we've not been able to meet, and so I feel like I'm having a little bit of a reunion with some of our church folks this morning, so I'm thankful for that. But I'm really grateful that we can all be back in this place and spend this time trying to encourage and challenge one another and help each other to live a better life. And speaking of a better life, I realize many of you started this year with some goals and some resolutions and some disciplines in your life. And we may have just here on the 5th of February given you the biggest off-ramp yet on that diet and exercise routine that you started with all this bacon and gravy and biscuits and all that we've done. And I'm sorry. Well, I really am not. I think you had a good breakfast, right? It was good. It was worth it. And I say that because I saw a little post this week that I thought you might appreciate. It said, the fact that Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, and Willie Nelson have all outlived Richard Simmons really makes me question the whole eating and exercise thing. Right? I mean, that just makes sense, doesn't it? So, you know, maybe that's a little bit of justification for where you are and what you see today. Well, as I look around the landscape of life where we live, our culture, things that are unfolding around us every day, I'm always reflecting on things that matter for men, things that I can challenge myself and challenge you to consider and to understand about this moment in time and the investment of your life and what you're doing, how you're living, and whether or not you're just living for existence or whether you're living to make a difference. And as I have given this thought and consideration for this upcoming opportunity, I decided that maybe this would be a time in life for us to take time in the forum to talk some about leadership. Men's Forum is something that we've been doing now for a number of years and really built it on the idea of an ancient concept. The ancient forum in Rome was a gathering place. I've actually had the privilege in years gone by to go to Rome and to see the excavation of the ruins of the ancient Forum of Rome. And what it was is that it was a public square. It was originally the marketplace, but a place that began to be the gathering place where people would come to exchange ideas, philosophies, to espouse religion, to do all kinds of different things that would happen as a part of the culture in the forum. And so it evolved into being really a formal gathering of people in order to discuss the great needs and the great challenges of the day. It was a cultural breeding ground for the ancient world. And in much the same way, I want to be sure that we are giving you ideas, inspiration, challenge to make this a cultural breeding ground for men to be the kind of men that God has called us to be and that we want to challenge one another to be. And so I know Drew just made reference to the fact that it's February and that we are soon to be upon Valentine's Day. And he was exactly right about that. You're now accountable. We've tried to give you a good heads up here. But let me give you one very important relational tip that I think you need to know and understand. You ready for this? This is big. And you may want to write it down. You may want to remember it. Here it is. It's on the screen. Every time you talk to your wife, you should remember that this conversation is being recorded in her head for training and quality purposes. Anything you say can be referenced in the future. So I just want you to get something today that you can take away, and that is a takeaway, guys. I promise you, that's something you want to know, and that's something you want to remember, especially the next time you're about ready to pop off with something that you might want to think about a little bit further. All right, well, let's get back to the forum. No doubt in the world in which we're living today, so much of the mindset of the world is being shaped and determined not by a central location like the forum where people went in the ancient world, but through technological connection that is going on in our world and in our society. Every day, all through the day, each of us is involved in messaging. all kinds of messaging that comes from social media, from mainstream media, from a variety of posts and podcasts and all those various things that are happening. And now we have the addition of AI algorithms that are truly driving so much of what we see and what we think. And the end result of all of this is that today we have so much information and instruction in the world, but the problem is we have no leadership. We have loads of things to know, but we have few who know how to process the knowledge and to use it effectively and with clarity in their lives. The global groupthink of our age, brought on by technological tethering, has created a world full of followers and a dearth of leaders. A world full of followers, but a dearth of leaders. And there is a tremendous need, men, for you, for me, all of us to understand that leadership is vital. Leadership is essential. Leadership is strategic. And leadership is a calling on every one of our lives. Why does leadership matter? Let me say it as succinctly as I know how. Leadership brings clarity where confusion, conflict, and complacency rule. Leadership brings clarity where confusion, conflict, and complacency rule. And so leadership is a vital part of our society, and we're going to give focus to it over these next few weeks. Let me just share with you some of my favorite, maybe I should say recent favorite, leadership quotes that I have compiled here for you, just to give us a little bit of a backdrop for where we are and what we're going to do today and over these next few days that we are together. And so let's look at these if we can. Douglas MacArthur said, "A true leader has the confidence to stand alone, the courage to make tough decisions, and the compassion to listen to the needs of others. He does not set out to be a leader, but becomes one by the equality of his actions and the integrity of his intent." Fabulous statement on leadership. Jim Rohn said, "The challenge of leadership is to be strong but not rude, to be kind but not weak, to be bold but not a bully, to be thoughtful but not lazy, to be humble but not timid, to be proud but not arrogant, to have humor but without folly." Dr. Martin Luther King said, "The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands in times of challenge and controversy." Got a lot of that in the world today, don't we? Where do we stand? John Quincy Adams said, "If your actions inspire others to dream more, learn more, do more, and become more, you are a leader." And then Henry Nouwen said, "The Christian leaders of the future have to be theologians, persons who know the heart of God and are trained through prayer study and careful analysis to manifest the divine event of God's saving work in the midst of the many seemingly random events of their time." And Margaret Thatcher said, "Consensus is the negation of leadership." Think about that in light of what I said to you earlier. What is shaping the groupthink of our world today? Social media. And it's creating followers who are all complacent in the same process of thought. Propaganda is ruling the world and shaping the generation of the future. And we have to fight the presence of propaganda with truth and conviction and with credible leadership. Amen. It's a vital part of where we are today. John Maxwell, who I have been blessed to know and to call a friend for many years, said this, "Everything rises and falls on leadership." Everything rises and falls on leadership. So I think each one of these carries some nugget of truth that is needed for the leadership crisis of the hour in which we're living. And when you stop and think about it, it really is true that leadership is more often challenged than it is celebrated. It's more often challenged than it is celebrated. When you decide to step out of the downstream and to go upstream in the world, I promise you, you're going to face challenges. And so what I'm talking to you about over these next few weeks is not going to be something that is a matter of convenience and that allows you to just sort of go on as life is. But it's something that I pray will truly be helpful to challenge you. By the way, I know we've said this, but I just want to add my 2 cents worth. Not only are we going to be talking about why leadership matters in Men's Forum, but we're building up to our Men's Conference, which is going to be based upon It's Time to Lead. And I think we have some of the most dynamic and most incredible speakers that we've ever had coming to be here with us on March 6 and 7. And so I certainly want you to get a ticket, but what I really want you to do and ask you to do, invite someone, buy several tickets, give them to people. I mean, if nothing else, you're getting 2 meals out of this, a breakfast and a barbecue dinner, plus you're getting the opportunity to be a part of this event, and I want to encourage you to do that. Now, all this talk about leadership, some of you are immediately stopping and thinking, but Pastor, I am not a leader. Yes, you are. Everybody leads somebody sometime. Everybody leads somebody sometime. If you do nothing more than take your dog for a walk, you're the leader. Or at least you should be. And everybody knows nobody takes cats for a walk, right? I mean, that's why we talk about herding cats, because you can't walk a cat. But at least you can walk a dog. But whatever you are in your life, you are called to lead. And so what I want to do is to let each of these gatherings be shaped around the life and the character and the example of one of the most incredible leaders that is presented to us in Scripture. The man's name is Nehemiah. And there's a book with his name found in the Old Testament, and it is a magnificent story of how a man, a very common man, a man who in many ways was not trained to do what he did, but a man who decided to step out, to step up, and to make a difference in his life. And so his name is Nehemiah. And this morning I want to take just a few minutes to step us into this story. And we'll look at it more thoroughly each week as we walk through. But let's just see what happened here. It says in Nehemiah chapter 1 and verse 1. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. Now it happened in the month of Chislev, in the 20th year, Chislev being a year in the Jewish calendar, as I was in Susa, the citadel, that Hanani, one of my brothers, came with certain men from Judah. And I asked them concerning the Jews who escaped, who had survived the exile, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, the remnant there in the province who have survived the exile are in great trouble and shame. And here's the key. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and the gates are destroyed by fire. That's like a news flash. That's like information that he didn't have, that he didn't know, and suddenly it's a breaking news report. Yeah, here's the status of Jerusalem. The walls are in ruin. The gates have been burned. The city is living in shambles and shame. And verse 4 says, and as soon as I heard those words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days, and I continued fasting and praying before the God of heaven. Over the next few verses, we read and are introduced to that prayer. But after Nehemiah prays, we begin to see what happens beyond that prayer. Down in verse 11, he says, O Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight to fear your name, and give success to your servant today and grant him mercy in the sight of this man. Now I was the cupbearer of the king. He was in a servant role. And so it says in chapter 2, in the month of Nisan, the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now, I had not been sad in his presence. And the king said to me, why is your face sad, seeing that you are not sick? This is nothing but sadness of heart. And then I was very much afraid. Finally, his face is showing on the outside what's really going on the inside. And it says, I said to the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my face be sad when the city, the place of my father's graves, lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire? And then the king said to me, what are you requesting? So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said to the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, that you should send me to Judah, to the city of my father's graves, that I may rebuild it. Here is a man who lives in a palace and whose daily job is to do nothing more than to be a servant, to be someone like a waiter to the king. But he has prayed and he has borne the burden of what has happened with his city and with his homeland. And he ends up speaking to a very powerful man about the possibility of going and rebuilding, changing the situation in the city of his fathers. Now, obviously, from the beginning, we realize this is a personal memoir. This is Nehemiah writing and telling the story of what happened in his life and how all of these events began to unfold. But from the very beginning, what we see and what we understand is that when Nehemiah got this report, this bad report about the condition of the city of Jerusalem, he did not just say, "This is awful." That's the first thing we usually do, right? When we learn about something that needs intervention, that needs change, something that needs to be addressed, our first response is always, "This is awful." But in Nehemiah's heart, he began to say, "This is unacceptable." Not just it's awful, but this is unacceptable. This cannot go on this way. Something must be done and someone needs to move. And so what was essentially a burden to Nehemiah to hear and to know became a brokenness inside of him. A brokenness that would become as though it were the very seedbed of a boldness that would transform the future of his life and the future of his nation. Now let me just give you a quick history lesson, and I know I can put you to sleep with history, especially at this hour of the morning. And so I want to take a moment, though, to help you to get an idea of this. 586 B.C., say that with me, when? 586. Okay, in 586 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, besieged the city of Jerusalem, its capital city. He destroyed the temple of Solomon. He broke down the walls of the city. He burned the gates of the city. He took the people of the city in exile to Babylon and took them captive. There's another whole book in the Old Testament, the book of Daniel, that describes the events of what happened when Nebuchadnezzar took the people of Israel and took them out of their homeland. And so that happened in 586 BC, that the city of Jerusalem, in all of its glory, built by David and by Solomon, was absolutely destroyed. And so much of the earliest history of the city of Jerusalem was eradicated by the Babylonians. 100 years later, Nehemiah is living in Babylon. Nehemiah is the cupbearer to the king of Babylon, whose name is Artaxerxes. And so 100 years after this event, this one man, hearing this sad report, began to ask God to let him make a difference in something that had happened a century before. And he began to seek to find a way to go back and to rebuild the city of his homeland. I guess I say part of that to you to remind you, conflict in the Middle East is not something new. And the dispute over the land of Israel has remained until this day. We've all seen the protest, the chants, from the river to the sea, Palestine must be free. This whole idea that really it's not just that there needs to be a two-state thing in Israel, but there needs to be the eradication of Israel. That has continued to be a perpetual issue throughout history. Why? Because from the book of Genesis, when God promised Abraham a nation and a land, and God led his people to that land called the land of Israel. The land of Israel has belonged by God's providence and plan to the people of Israel. That's a part of the scripture. You go read the Bible, you can't find any other worldview but that worldview. Does that mean that we don't need to care about the plight of other people or just to say that's? Absolutely not. But I just want you to know biblically, historically, this is not a new and a modern issue, though there is modern conflict over it. It is an ancient issue that has existed across many, many years. And so here was an effort to eradicate Israel in 586 BC. Think about that. We're about to celebrate America 250. I'm talking about 586 before Jesus came. That's how old and how far back this all goes. But here's the critical thing. The walls of Jerusalem represented the witness of Jerusalem. Jerusalem had stood as a witness to the world of God's provision and God's promise to his people to sustain them and to use them to be a part of his promise that would ultimately culminate in the coming of the Messiah, Jesus Christ. But all of that had, as though it were, been eclipsed by this massive destruction that came and the dispersion of the people of Israel. They were dispersed then. Then they came back to their homeland here at the time of Nehemiah. They remained there until 70 AD after the ministry of Jesus, when Jesus was crucified and resurrected. In 70 AD, Titus, the Roman general, marched into Jerusalem, destroyed the city of Jerusalem, scattered the people to the world, and there was no Jewish homeland and there was no Jewish people gathered until 1947. And when most people would have been assimilated into the cultures of the world, God regathered the Jewish people back in the land of Israel. And it's almost as though the clock started ticking toward the end of time, because God is fulfilling in our day the promise that he made in ancient world, but a promise that still has a future possibility, and that is the coming of Jesus Christ. So I'm just saying all that to say Jerusalem, past, present, and future, is all a part of the plan of God. It was then, it is today, and we are living and seeing this unfold in our day and in our time. But as we see that and as we talk about that, I come back to the fact that it was the walls that were down that brought shame and reproach to the people. The tragedy was that not just the city had been destroyed, but that 100 years later, the people were just sort of living in complacency, living sort of in tents around the rubble of the city, and they were doing nothing about it. Nothing moved anyone to try to change their condition or to ultimately begin to do something that would create a future. And so Nehemiah gets this report. And what some people would dismiss as, well, that's a problem for them. Because, by the way, Nehemiah lived 1,000 miles away. 1,000 miles away. Now think about that in the ancient world. He couldn't jump on an airplane and go check this out. He lived 1,000 miles away. But what he heard became like a small hinge on a door that opened something in his heart. And Nehemiah began to realize that there was something that he needed to do, a moment of awareness, a moment of action, and the result of that was that Nehemiah decided, God, you want me to go rebuild the city. What does that tell us about leadership? What do you learn about leadership from that event that I've just shared with you? Well, the first thing is this, that leadership matters because leaders view problems as personal responsibilities. Leaders view problems as personal responsibilities. Though he lived 1,000 miles away, his location didn't change the burden or the concern that he had for the people or the city of God. And he understood what it was, the need to rebuild, even though things were then in ruins. He decided that it was time to take a risk and it was time to go to work. And if nobody would do it, and no one else had cared to do it, Nehemiah decided, I'm going to make a difference. This week I saw this little post. I thought you'd appreciate this too. It's kind of fun. It simply says this: there's only one guy in my office who works, so we changed the men's bathroom sign from men to Ben. Well, Nehemiah kind of had his own bathroom. He had his own thing, man. He was the only guy that was willing to work, but he was willing to go to work. He was willing to say, God, I want you to take my life and I want you to use my life and to allow me to be able to be used for your honor and for your glory. And so it was that that personal burden began to bring clarity in his mind and heart that it was time for a recovery and that there needed to be a rebuilding project. I say that because none of you in this room are going to be called to travel 1,000 miles and go build a wall. That is, unless you're in some kind of construction and you get a bid. But outside of that, you're not going to be doing that. But there are things in your life and things in my life that need us to go back and to rebuild. And may I remind you that rebuilding is always harder than building. Boy, have I learned that. We've been in the process of some big projects recently where we've been trying to renovate and rebuild, and it seems like every time we turn another page, we got another problem because we're trying to retrofit something that is either being required because of new standards or trying to be repaired because of bigger issues. And you just find that rebuilding and renovating is much harder than just building when you're doing it. For some of us, we need to rebuild a relationship in our lives. There's a relationship with someone in our lives that's not right. And it's easy to say that's wrong, but it's another step to say, I'm going to make it right if God will allow. Now, we can't fix everything, can't change anyone. The Bible says, as much as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. We can't, it is as much as it depends on you. You can't fix others, but I just want you to know it may take time to rebuild marriage. It may take time to rebuild a relationship with your children. It may be that you've got to help rebuild a church. I can tell you that's a hard thing. When a church has diminished and a church has divided, one of the hardest things in the world is to recover and to rebuild a church. We need to help rebuild our community and our nation. Yeah, America's about to celebrate 250, but America's not in good shape. Some of you need to run for office. Let me see. No, I'm kidding. All right, Lincoln, I'll let you. You got a wonderful name, buddy. But no, I'm just saying rebuilding is a vital part of life. And it's this that we have to understand. Just like Nehemiah, we have to begin to go to God and say, God, can I make a difference? Because leaders view problems as personal responsibility. Something else we learn from Nehemiah here in this passage is that leaders choose a posture over a position. Leadership is choosing a posture over a position. As I've already told you, Nehemiah's job was a menial job. It was a labor job. He did not have a corner office. He didn't have a business card. He didn't have anyone that was servant to him that we know of, but he was servant, cupbearer to the king. He was a server and not a leader, a domestic servant, but he was in a providential place by God's amazing movement in his life, shaping him and preparing him for this place, this time, and this hour. And what we often dismiss as being displaced from a platform of leadership is just the opposite. God has you where he wants you to do what he wants you to do. And that's a providential thing. And when we fail to see that and we underestimate that, then what we end up doing is that we end up realizing that we have diminished the plan and the purpose of God for our lives. Mark Sanborn said, you don't need a title to be a leader. Leadership is not about holding authority over other people. Nehemiah didn't hold authority over anyone. But leadership is about a positive action influencing people to reach new heights. And that's what I think there's a need for today. There's a crisis of need in our culture and community for strong, clear, courageous, practical leadership, men who will step up and who won't say that my leadership is dependent upon a platform for personal promotion, but it's dependent upon a passion that won't quit in my heart to make a difference. And that was what was true of Nehemiah. Now, Nehemiah's promotion to leadership came through prayer. That was what did it. It was through prayer. He got down on his knees. He didn't rise up before everyone and say, here's what I'm going to do. Nehemiah got down on his knees, and as he began to pray, prayer began to be the breakthrough place of his life. And good and godly leadership has to begin on our knees. Now, I don't have time to go back and fully break this down, but starting in verse 5 and going down through verse 11 is the prayer of Nehemiah. And what we find in this prayer is that first, when Nehemiah prayed, he focused on who God is. Not who he was or where he was. First, he focused on who God is. He said there, O Lord God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant and steadfast love with those who love him and keep his commandments, let your ear be attentive and your eyes open. Hear the prayer of your servant that I now pray night and day for the people of Israel, your servants. He began to talk about who is God. Let me remember who my God is. And when you remember who God is, then you're ready to deal with who you are and where you are. And that's what he began to do. And what he began to realize is that, yes, me, my nation, my people, we are sinners. We are weak. We have fallen. We are broken. We have lived in complacency. We have accepted life as it is. And God, there's something that needs to change. And then he went back and began to pray the promises of God. Down in verse 8, he said, remember the word that you commanded to Moses, that if you're unfaithful, I will scatter you among the peoples. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though your outcasts are in the uttermost parts of heaven, there I will gather them and bring them to the place that I have chosen to make them dwell there. Jerusalem has always been the place where the presence of God has touched earth. And God said, I'm going to bring my people back together, and I'm going to bring them there. He had promised that he would, and Nehemiah said, God, I'm leaning into what you've promised, not what I can do. And then there's that thing there that's kind of the final prayer. Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and the prayer of your servants who delight to fear your name, and give us success and grant mercy in the sight of this man. Who's the man he was talking about? King Artaxerxes. He said, I'm going to ask God that you help me. And so prayer is the X factor. It's the one extra thing that changes the difference between just those who aspire to self-promoting, self-asserting leadership and really becoming a man of God and a leader that can make a difference. Prayer is what allows us to receive and to give what we can because of what God can provide. And so prayer is not a retreat. It is a warehouse filled with all the resources of God that can be distributed through our lives when we walk with Him, when we trust Him, and when we are willing to let Him change our lives. It was Edmund Burke who made this statement, and it's a challenge to us again today. All that is necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. All that is necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. And that's why leadership matters. Because good men must determine that we are going to do something. Something to stand in the face and the place of the evil that surrounds us. That in our lives we can make a difference. The third thing that I would point out to you from this life of Nehemiah is the fact that leaders risk confidence to display courage. They risk confidence to display courage. Courage doesn't mean that you're confident. Courage many times is nothing more than just taking a big risk, but trusting an even bigger God. I love the fact that it says there in Nehemiah chapter 2, it says that he was serving the king one day, and the king said, "Why are you sad?" Now, if you study the background of ancient history, the servants who came to the king were not to do anything that was to be personal or to draw attention to themselves. Everything was to be about the king, about his well-being, about the atmosphere you created around the king. You had no right to go into the king's presence and to vent or to give self-expression of any kind. And when Nehemiah suddenly had the king look at him and say to him, "Why are you sad?" He knew that the very next word could be off with his head or into the jail or whatever the king wanted to do. Get this guy out of my presence. But I love the fact that it says Nehemiah prayed and then he spoke to the king. Have you ever done one of those quickies? You know, like, whew, God help me, here I go. You know, but he did. And in that moment, lacking confidence at every level, Nehemiah spoke courageously in the moment to the one person who had the authority to change the conditions of Israel. He didn't have any authority to do anything, but he had the potential to influence someone who could change everything. And that's exactly what Nehemiah did in that moment. He took that moment, and in that moment, he began to speak to the king, and God moved and God intervened because this man was willing to take a risk by faith. The Bible says without faith, it is impossible to please God. Those who come to him must believe that he is and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. And while his faith may have been small and weak, he exercised faith in a moment because leadership rises from burden and brokenness, not from boldness and belligerence. It comes from burden and brokenness. And what breaks your heart may be the key to helping you find where you need to stand up, be courageous, and make a difference. That's what happened in the life of Nehemiah. We always want self-confidence and self-reliance, but Nehemiah was willing to trust the Lord and to step up and to step out. 2021, I remember so well, stepping to the platform in the auditorium here, standing behind a podium, just like the one I'm standing behind right now, and delivering a message on Mother's Day that I called Three Women and a Baby. Some of you are old enough to remember an old movie called Three Men and a Baby, but this was Three Women and a Baby because it was based upon the account in the book of Exodus of the saving of the life of baby Moses. Whole lot to that. You can go read about it, Exodus 1 through 3. But I preached that message that morning, and through that message that day, I ended it calling and challenging our church to rise up and to step into the water, as though it were, of saving the lives of babies and extending love and care to mothers who faced unplanned pregnancies. Of course, the abortion issue in our culture has gone on raging and continues today, even at new levels. Just a different mode and method. Mifepristone, a drug, not going necessarily to a clinic, though many clinics still exist. And frankly, today in the states that have protected their clinics and their rights, they have, many of them, the right to terminate even up through the third trimester, the day before birth. Hard to believe what we allow in our culture that's hidden from sight and what we deny. But I believe there was a need for us to make a difference here. We may not change Washington, we may not change the culture, but I believe we could make a difference here. But I'll never forget standing there that morning thinking, this is one of those do or die moments. I may stand up here and preach a sermon and everybody go, mm-hmm, and walk out the door. But before that ended that day, a man, I don't know if he's in this room this morning, I don't see him, Jimmy Perkins and his wife Marilyn, came to me. They are in their 80s, in tears, and he handed me a check and said, Pastor, we want to give you $1,000 for every one of our grandchildren. And he handed me the first check for that ministry. And I'm telling you, over the next few weeks, the floodgates opened of support and a pathway forward. We just had last Thursday night, Thursday a week ago, our first ever banquet of celebration of the life and the ministry of Hope Women's Center. And since the doors have opened in 2023, we have seen 380 babies born and several thousand mothers. Several thousand mothers who have experienced love and care and comfort and encouragement because of the impact of Hope Women's Center. And I have to tell you, I was scared to death that maybe I was leading us somewhere that would be, frankly, a dead end for the church. And it has been a life thread for the church. And I thank God for that. It's gone far beyond what I thought it could be or would be even now. And now we're about to open the doors in another area of ministry called Hope Mental Wellness Center. You've probably seen it next door. It's been a real long journey getting there, let me tell you, because of renovation. But all that to say, we continue to seek to find ways to say we're going to make a difference because we're not going to do nothing in a world that is crumbling and living in shambles and in shame. That's what made a difference for him. Well, I need to wrap this up. Fourth thing and final thing, and I know that if I don't give you this, you're going to all send me messages and say, Pastor, why didn't you finish that today? So let me just fill in your blanks, okay? Fill in your blanks right now. Leaders bring clarity where complacency rules. We'll take this a lot further over the next few weeks, but Nehemiah himself ended up bringing clarity where there was complacency. He went to Jerusalem with the blessing of Artaxerxes. He actually gave him letters of resource that he was able to go to the forest and to get timber and to get the things that he would need to rebuild. And so ultimately he went, and then he got there, and one night he did a survey of the area. He didn't tell anybody why he was there, what he was there to do, but he did a survey. And then finally, in chapter 2, verse 18, the Bible tells us there was a moment when he went to speak to the people, and he said, these things must not be. And the people said, let us rise and build. Leadership began to make a difference. And we'll take that and trace that going forward. But I want you to know that while you may be sitting here today and saying, well, you know, I don't know what this has to do with me, and I'm not in a big position of leadership and all those things, I want you to know God has more for you than what you've done with your life. Charles Schultz said it this way, life is like a 10-speed bicycle. Most of us have gears we never use. And I'm challenging you to shift gears and to do something that you've never done before. You say, well, Pastor, I'm not real comfortable with that. I don't know if I really like that. Well, that's okay. One of my favorite stories is about what happened during the Vietnam War. General Westmoreland, who was the chief of military operations in Vietnam, once met a group of young paratroopers. And when he did, he walked down looking at each of them, and he said to them, to the first one, how do you like jumping out of planes, son? And the young man said, I love it. I can't wait. He asked another, saying, how do you like jumping? And he said, it's the greatest experience of my life, sir. And then he came to a third young man, and he said, young man, how do you like jumping? He said, I hate it. And Westmoreland stopped and looked at him and said, well, then why do you do it? He said, because I like being around people that jump. I want you to be around people that jump. I want us to learn to like it because it's what we can do together. Okay? God bless you. See you next week. Thanks for coming this morning. Why leadership matters.